Chapter 15. John Sovereign turned in bed to find Mari staring at him. "How are you feeling?" she asked him. "It's a big day." "Much better, thanks." He looked up to the ceiling to see the time projected there in red. "Is that the time? I slept for an hour." "You slept for 13 hours. You called out in the night again, but I didn't wake you and you settled down after a while." "I was dreaming about faces again." He moved closer to her and pulled the blanket down to her hips, exposing her burgeoning belly. He spread his hand across it before pressing his lips there for a long moment. He rested his cheek on her, so warm from bed and the wonderful life-giving mechanisms of her body. Her very atoms were at that instant busy forming their twins. "So much life and death. The intensity of the contradiction is hard to process sometimes. And Mari, as much as I don't want to focus on the magnitude of the tragedy here, I guess I can't escape my subconscious, at least when I'm asleep." She stroked his hair, her fingers barely skimming the contours of his skull. "This situation is not your doing. You tried to stop it." "Maybe if I'd taken it public." Her hand stopped. "They would have made you disappear. Of course you know that. There was no stopping it." She sighed and resumed stroking him. "You need to stop now. There's no turning back. Today we close the door." He gave her belly a final caress. "Hear that, kids? Mom says we have work to do." He pulled himself away from her reluctantly and then kicked away the sheets and sat on the opposite edge of the bed, turning his head back to look at her and flash that million-dollar smile. "Into the shower with me." She watched him stand and walk to the bathroom with his leonine grace. Damn, he was a beautiful man. She heard the spray of water as he turned it on, threw the covers back, and ran on her toes after him, holding her belly and laughing. Oscar Corona had been awakened by a dull ache. He found himself in what appeared to be a well-appointed hotel room and was slightly disoriented for a moment until he remembered where he was and why and what was causing the pain. He sat up and took a sip of water from a glass on the bedside table. He couldn't help smiling. He could not believe he was here. The opportunity of a lifetime fell woefully short. One day before, he had been a bus driver. Now he was a citizen of Abacus with a new life before him. Well, almost. The pain from the prior morning's minor surgery wasn't all that bad, he thought as he rolled out of bed. The medical staff was right when they told him he would have a little discomfort, but it was his body healing and he did not need to be medicated. That they were all going to have to get used to the idea of occasional discomfort. He did feel all right, quite good, actually. He had applied cold packs to the incision site as directed and had slept well. He wanted to shower and to explore the facility while he had the chance, maybe eat a little food. Other than an orientation in the theater with John Sovereign several hours later, he had nothing on the agenda. He had been shocked at the lack of paperwork. He had expected lines to wait in and papers to sign, pamphlets and rules, but there was none of that. He was astounded by how different this experience was from what he had imagined. It was all so simple. His card had gotten him through the door and into the care of a warm and welcoming greeter, one of several standing next to stacks of flexible computer screens. She picked one up, turned it on, scanned his retina with it, and handed it over. "It's all set," she told him, "personalized for you. Everything you need is in there. Find a quiet spot, watch the tutorial on the home screen." He started to thank her, but she surprised him by smiling and opening her arms to him. They embraced in a way that was usually reserved for family and dear friends, and she spoke quietly in his ear that she was excited to be taking on this adventure together. "Welcome." And he knew he was welcome. That was it. He began his new life with nothing but a crazy high-tech flexible computer screen and the clothes on his back, and even the clothes were gone in less than 24 hours. After watching the tutorial, he had been able to pull up a map of the facility and choose any residential room that showed green. He noted that after he navigated his way there and crossed the threshold, the highlight on the map turned red. The room was simple, but warm and earthy. There was a sitting area with mission-style furniture and a beautiful but simple cotton area rug and shades of green over hardwood floors. There was no television, no phone, no microwave. As a matter of fact, and he had to walk through a couple of times to convince himself that this was true, no plastic. He was sure there would be at least a plastic pen in the drawer of the small quarter-sawn oak desk in the corner, but there was no implement there, not even a pencil. The tutorial had explained to him there would be some initial medical procedures, and he should not eat the evening meal. And sure enough, the following morning, he was awakened by an alarm from his screen telling him to report to the medical clinic. He clicked on the live map and left his room, realizing with a grin that there was no reason to lock the door. As he made his way across the facility to the medical wing, he saw many people following their maps, but people were also looking up and smiling and nodding at each other. Oscar turned the final corner leading to the medical wing and followed his map into a bright amphitheater with several others. Two people in lab coats at the front of the room motioned them in. One of them, a man, spoke in a heavy Scottish accent. "Okay, we're getting close. Only a couple more people expected. Find a seat, please. We'll start in 5 minutes. Make yourselves comfortable. Say hello to your neighbors if you like. We're in for a lovely morning." Several people chuckled. "Hey, I'm Oscar," he said, holding out his hand to the broad-faced man sitting next to him. In response, the man held up one finger and pulled up an app on his screen and motioned for Oscar to repeat himself. "Hello, I'm Oscar," he repeated slowly. Words appeared on the screen in an unknown language, which the man read. He spoke into the tablet and new words appeared in English. "Hello, Oscar. I am Sandor," Oscar laughed. The man spoke again, and the translation scrolled across the screen. "This is a great toy, is it not? I want to use all the time, but we are told to learn English as soon as we can. But I think first day is okay." "Yes, I think the first day is okay. Where are you from?" The man spoke, and Oscar waited for his words to appear on the screen. "I was from Hungary, but there are no nations now. We are all of Abacus." Oscar was surprised. For a moment, he'd forgotten about the devastation that the world would soon face. He was thinking of a response when the Scot at the front of the room spoke up. "Okay, we're ready to roll. I am Callum McGregor, and I'm going to explain the morning's activities. Ladies, you will be having one procedure done this morning, and gentlemen, you lucky dogs, will be having two. After our little chat, ladies will go with Durrani here," he indicated the woman next to him, "and gentlemen will stick with me. But right now, we will explain both procedures because I'm sure you women will be interested in knowing how the men will be spending their morning. Their procedure will be affecting you as well, not to mention your potential future sons." It was Durrani's turn to talk. "Yes, well, our first procedure will take approximately 2 hours from start to finish. We will be resetting your body's external and internal flora to a state that is ideal for maintaining wellness. Every one of you is carrying unwanted hitchhikers upon and within yourselves that are not invited into the boundaries of Abacus. We will be providing you all with a delicious milkshake." With these words, she stuck out her tongue and grimaced to chuckles from the room. "And then we shall adjourn to a warren of private sterile chambers, where you will each relinquish your clothing and be submerged in your own tank of goo. The only skills required to complete this part one of the reset are breathing through a straw for 90 painless seconds and the ability to poop. there were more uneasy chuckles. No, it won't be particularly pleasant, but it is actually a quick process. You will certainly feel some abdominal discomfort, but it will all pass, so to speak, within 45 minutes. At this point, you will drink a second concoction and take a fortified shower, and you will start to feel normal, or quite honestly, much better than normal, very, very quickly. You will leave this procedure in the stylish scrubs we will provide. Any questions? A woman in the second row raised her hand. Callum pointed to her. I'm vegan. Are the sheikhs vegan? Oh, Les, answered Callum. We're all vegans now, didn't you know? Oscar looked around the room. Most people seemed unsurprised, but he did see a couple of people staring with concern at their screens. Missed that little detail, did you? He grinned. Don't fret. John will explain everything later tonight. Oscar was taken aback by his cavalier use of the name John. Surely he wasn't referring to John Sovereign, who built this facility and made all of this possible. Wouldn't his employees call him Mr. Sovereign? Callum spoke again. Procedure number 2 for the gentleman. He held up a 2-inch-long device. This is a bridge contraceptive. As of today, you will all be abridged. I will pass this around so you can get a good look at it, as one of them will be part of you forevermore. He handed the device to the first man in the first row, who scrutinized it and turned it over in his hand. The bridge, you will see, has a small clamp at each end. Connecting these clamps is a solid, slow-release contraceptive hormone. The devices will be inserted with each vas deferens passing through the open clamps. These clamps will remain open for a period of time to be determined later. The slow-release hormone will be providing the contraception for the time being. This is a revolutionary advance in contraception, people. You should feel very lucky to be receiving it. Very little hormone is required to prevent conception, largely because of the device's proximity to the affected structures. If at some future date you are to embark on the great adventure of parenthood, you will receive an injection that will neutralize and dissolve the hormonal bar, and within days you'll be as fertile as a wild stallion, or at the least an excited rabbit. For the next 3-month period, you will have sex with one and only one woman, the woman with whom you applied for the parenthood opportunity, and then your clamps will slowly, over the course of 3 months, close on the vas deferens, rendering you permanently sterile. He looked around the room. Everyone okay? This is what you signed up for, people. Good times. A blond man raised his hand and asked in a Nordic accent, What if you do not conceive in the 3 months? Callum shrugged. Then, my friend, you will not reproduce. Durrani spoke. If anyone wants more information on either of these procedures, simply access the medical library from your screen and search for entrance procedures. Everything is in there in great boring detail. Now, one last word before we get started. We are entering into a new place, a new time, a new reality. We are not going to be a pharmaceutical society. You are all here because you're strong and healthy, mentally and physically, and there are literally millions of people who would like to be here in your stead. Both of these procedures are unpleasant to a degree, but they are not dangerous or overly painful. Both of these procedures are unpleasant to a degree, but they are not dangerous or overtly painful. We would like you to, in medical terms, suck it up. Many of us are unaccustomed to discomfort. We are all transitioning into being better people, people closer to nature, whose bodies are allowed to function as they should. Having an ability to withstand some discomfort makes us all the more impervious to manipulation. Gentlemen, because of your flora reset, the risk of infection is functionally zero, and you should recover quickly. Other than the sedative administered at the beginning of your procedure, we are all going to do this without analgesics and certainly without opiates. There were nods in the crowd. Oscar was fine with all of this. He was anxious to see the interior of Abacus and ready to take on any hurdle that brought him closer to his new life. Oscar moved through a sea of scrubs-clad people and took a seat in the theater. It was artfully designed of gleaming wood and well-constructed, set up in the round with nothing but a small stage in the center with a microphone and a few well-placed amb lights shining down. The seats were roomy and comfortable, for which, in his soreness, he was grateful. A tall, striking man sitting a few seats down from him was slouched in his, lost in thought. He noticed Oscar, glancing at him, and sat up straighter. "Hey," he smiled and gave a little wave. "Hey, how you doing? So, pretty crazy, huh?" "Yeah, really. I can't believe this is actually happening." "I know, a whole new life. I don't even know how to process it yet." "I think we're all in the same boat there." Oscar looked around the room. "I'm surprised at how beautiful this place is." "Why is that?" "Well, it's all temporary, right? Nobody will be staying here longer than it takes to transition into the city. Why make it so nice?" "Why not? Employ people, get rid of some of that mountain of money." Oscar thought about it. John Sovereign's billions were all but useless now. I never looked at it that way. That guy did have an obscene amount of money. It's worth jack shit now. "You got that right, brother." He glanced around the room and then at his watch. "Let's continue this conversation later. I gotta run." "Oh, okay. I'm Oscar." He held out his hand. "Great to meet you, Oscar. I'm John." He shook his hand and then moved into the aisle and jogged up to the stage. "What?" said Oscar, to no one. John Sovereign held his hand up to still the applause. The room quieted, and he paced thoughtfully for a moment before looking up and bringing the microphone to his lips. "I have much that I want to say to you all. How we came to be here, what our goals are, what the future may look like. You are, however, the last group through, and we're nearly out of time, so I'm going to talk fast and I'm going to keep this as short as possible. Just under one-third of the Abacus population sits in this room right now. Take a look around you at your new friends and neighbors and family. Multiply this number of people by 3, and you have the population of the entire Earth. These days are filled with barely containable excitement and at the same time, tragedy on a scale so massive we may never truly comprehend it. I never knew that I could live with such internal conflict. How deepest sorrow and purest hope could inhabit the same mind simultaneously, but there they are, in equal measures, both vying for control of my psyche. We're about to embark together upon an experiment that is unprecedented in the history of humankind. Let's talk for a minute about how we got here. There's an overt cause that will surprise nearly everyone in this room, and then there are a whole slew of secondary reasons that are actually much more important. Here's a question for you. What's the biggest story of the past 10 years other than our current situation? Several people called out, "Outliers!" Yes, outliers. Finally, our planet was contacted by people who were not of Earth. We were all relieved that they were benign and not monstrous-looking, and we were able to have a conversation with them before they headed off on their next neighborhood visit, perhaps never to be seen again. Well, of course, there was a lot more to the story. What actually happened was they politely asked whether they could use one of our natural resources, an element, Ushan, which we were not even aware existed. Clearly, we weren't using it, and it was valuable to them. They needed very small amounts, but were hoping to add to their stores to protect many, many generations of their people to come. They offered some amazing incentives for opening a mine here. Technologies that would bring unprecedented wealth and alleviate much human suffering. Who do you suppose the government came to when the outliers suggested a small Ushan operation here? Of course they came to Sovereign Industries. The mining process involved applying a solvent provided by the outliers that would cause the Ushan vapors to be released from the soil and then extracted through a vacuum condensation process. It all sounded so simple. I was wary. I had some of my analysts run scenarios, and initial data showed the potential for a catastrophic chain reaction. We didn't know enough about how the process would affect the planet and our biology. Research was needed, years' worth, or decades. It wasn't what the government or its money-hungry patrons wanted to hear. When ambient electricity became a reality, I put some very aggressive and wealthy people out of business. They were very quick and happy to step up in my place and say what several governments wanted to hear. I was already several years into the Abacus Project when all this happened because I knew our failure to deal with many key environmental threats would eventually lead to disaster. When it became apparent that the Ushan plan was going to go forward, I dropped everything and focused on getting Abacus ready, much to the dismay of my stockholders. You should all know that it was not the intention of the outliers to hurt us. They assigned a liaison to me, Tirfa Allman, he's called. He is a stellar man in more ways than one. He listened to my concerns and he studied the data and he tried to convince the others that it just wasn't worth the risk. But that ship had left the port, led by industrialists, hungry for a new revenue stream. Allman and the other outliers supported the creation of Abacus and even identified some flaws in the technology that protects our new city and probably saved all of our lives. He has shown genuine caring for the people of this planet and shares our grief at the conditions we've created that have damaged it. And he guaranteed me that if the mining operation damages things as I suspected it would, he will hold his people accountable and try to undo the damage. He hesitated, as if searching for words. We have our answer now. 9 hours ago, both mines, one outside Minsk and the other near Hashima, conducted small sample runs. We've lost contact with both facilities and widening regions surrounding them. If our calculations are correct, the toxins that are filling the air carried on the trade winds will envelop the entire planet within 2 weeks. There were murmurs and sounds of quiet crying from the audience. This brings me to that slew of secondary reasons we're here. We made a mess of our planet. I'm not going to belabor this point. We all know it's true. It's a desecration. Compounding that, we have many systems in place that require human intervention. This sudden removal of governance from these systems will mean massive destruction and contamination. Nuclear power plants, chemical plants, pumping stations. The outliers may not be able to undo what we have done, but they are a good people. I believe they will do what they can, but we have no control over that. We must go on with our lives inside Abacus as if we will never leave it, and most likely, we never will. We've tried very hard to create an environment here that is conducive to wellness and the survival of the human species. How that environment took shape and who was chosen to populate it was the result of a tremendous amount of reflection and research on what led the people of this planet to the brink of destruction. There are so many factors that we could blame: greed, ignorance, short-sightedness, lust for power and control, and so the list goes on. But really, all of these things can be distilled down to one key threat: the failure to recognize, accept, and deal with reality. So we focused on that concept and tried to identify all the ways that delusional behavior manifests itself and then remove them from our new society. The first is dogmatic thinking. Thought-terminating beliefs are a danger to our species. A mind that is committed to a belief system loses objectivity and becomes hostile towards anything or anyone that contradicts it, whether that denial is harmful to ourselves and others or not. For this reason, Abacus's religion and politics free. Many would ask if morality can exist without religion, but of course it can and does. We have seen this played out throughout human history with moral and immoral acts committed by people who are religious and people who are not. Morality is simply an understanding that we are all individual units of life, having played no part in our own creation, and possessing an equal right to exist unmolested. Morality is a commitment to not interfere with the autonomy or wellness of another being. It is a choice. It has always been a choice. The fact is, people who are mentally, emotionally, and morally healthy have absolutely no need or desire to control or subjugate other people, and they have every reason to support others in balance and wellness, and that is who we have tried to bring together here. We also reached the conclusion that people who are mentally, emotionally, and morally healthy do not need to be controlled, and so Abacus is government-free. There are no taxes, no laws, no restrictions on your personal interactions or movements, as long as they do not interfere with the equal autonomy of every other citizen of Abacus. We do, however, trust that each of you will uphold the community standard, and because of our circumstances, the consequence for breaching this trust is necessarily devastating. Those who commit any crime of any kind against another citizen of Abacus or their property will be ejected, which of course means a rapid death. If this seems harsh to you, it may be helpful to consider that this is not a punishment. It is a stark reality that we, all the human beings on Earth, in fact, all of life on Earth, are held here together for the foreseeable future, certainly through all of our lifetimes and perhaps those of many generations to come, on a 400-square-mile patch of land. We are not going to get into the prison business. We are not going to get into any business. We will do what we have to do to preserve peace and wellness. People who upset the equilibrium must be removed. Abacus is self-sufficient. The water and atmosphere are purified. There are more than enough homes for the number of people who live here. You can live in the town or in a more rural area. There are 4 state-of-the-art hydroponic greenhouses capable of producing all the food we need, and we have heirloom seeds available for home gardening. There will be enough people willing to work these greenhouses to keep them functional. There will be people willing to help anyone learn about gardening who wants to learn. There are doctors here and health clinics ready to treat minor to semi-major injuries and conditions. But our lifestyle will be healthy by default, and we are not equipped to handle serious illnesses or devastating injuries. We will all have to learn to live with the limitations of the human body. Pain management and compassionate aid in dying will be available to those who are suffering in ways we cannot heal. There are no schools, no cars, no plastics, no jobs to go to every day for no purpose other than to perpetuate a system that is unsustainable. We will live together, love and care for each other, learn together, teach each other. We are entrusting ourselves to each other. Human beings are capable of incredible generosity and beauty, and those are the qualities that I hope we will all strive to embody. There are cultural artifacts we will need to train ourselves away from. We've been conditioned, especially in the Western world, to believe that if we don't meet a certain physical standard, we are unworthy. None of that here. You will not be marketed to. You will not be enticed to consume anything for the benefit of another. Your self-worth will not be stolen from you and then sold back to you in the form of personal products or weight loss schemes. Your normal, healthy urges will not be demonized and then sold back to you under the table to generate another person's wealth. You are fine as you are, and you always have been. No one will interfere with that truth any longer. We have all been so conditioned by advertising that I would like to propose that we don't use images of people at all for a while. It's a suggestion, not a law, but I hope you all will understand the spirit in which I suggest it. Photographers, after you pick up your new supplies from the repository, I would ask that you hold off on shooting people until we have all grown accustomed to the new way of thinking. It's nearly time. When you get inside Abacus, there will be people to guide you and help you understand what resources are available and how to get you settled into the new world. Some of it we'll figure out together as we go. Our first order of business will be to grieve together as the world as we know it passes away. I wish we could have saved them all, but this is our reality. It's the most somber day that ever was, even as we begin our new lives together. And now I'm going to stop speaking and we're going to file out of here and enter Abacus. And I don't want you to applaud me. There is no hero worship here. In our new world, people are not deserving of a superior level of respect because they can throw a ball well or were born into wealth or have long, slender bodies and good teeth. Please remember, when you see someone in Abacus that you recognize from the news or entertainment industry, that is all over now. They're just people of Abacus like you. And I'm just John, your neighbor. Now let's go. He walked off the stage and headed for the door, and the people filed out after him.